Welcome to the Divided Kingdom, the evening news program of commentary in a Christian vein. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly.
And this is Lou Caverly.
This is indeed a Watchman program, and we do start out by asking all of you to pray very earnestly for our brother and co-host, Pastor Carl Sanders. We have learned that he is rather ill and perhaps will even be facing open heart surgery. So we do value him very much, and we love his friendship, and we love his pastoral role with us. So do pray for him. And we have heard on another program that Catherine Albrecht may be ill and something about brain tumors. We do know that she valiantly fought a battle with breast cancer. So do keep Catherine Albrecht in your prayers. She's done so much dynamic work about the microchip and all of the surveillance activities that are going on in our sinister world. Since we're a watchman, I would like to read to you chapter 1 of Jeremiah and part of chapter 2, and then Lou is going to give you a living example of a man who is a watchman in a very, very important area of our life today in America and worldwide, an area that God is watching very carefully. Jeremiah. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests that were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin, to whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captives in the 5th month. Then the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee, and before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a child. But the Lord said unto me, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. Be not afraid of their faces, for I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched my mouth. And the Lord said unto me, Behold, I have put my words in thy mouth. See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms, to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down, to build and to plant. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Jeremiah, what seest thou? And I said, I see a rod of an almond tree. Then said the Lord unto me, Thou hast well seen, for I will hasten my word to perform it. And the word of the Lord came unto me the second time, saying, What seest thou? And I said, I see a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north. Then the Lord said unto me, Out of the north an evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. For lo, I will call all the families of the kingdoms of the north, saith the Lord, and they shall come, and they shall set every one his throne at the entering of the gates of Jerusalem, and against all the walls thereof round about, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will utter my judgments against them, touching all their wickedness, who have forsaken me, and have burned incense unto other gods, and worshipped the works of their own hands. Thou therefore gird up thine loins, and arise, and speak unto them all that I command thee. Be not dismayed at their faces, lest I confound thee before them. For behold, I have made thee this day a defense city and an iron pillar and brazen walls against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, against the princes thereof, against the priests thereof, and against the people of the land. And they shall fight against thee, but they shall not prevail against thee, for I am with thee, saith the Lord, to deliver thee. Chapter 2. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith the Lord, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness to a land that was not sown. Israel was holiness unto the Lord, and the first fruits of his increase All that devour him shall offend. Evil shall come upon them, saith the Lord. Hear ye the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, What iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me, and have walked after vanity, and are become vain? Neither said they, Where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and of pits, through a land of drought and of the shadow of death, through a land that no man passed through, and where no man dwelt? And I brought you into a plentiful country, to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land, and made mine heritage an abomination. The priests said not, Where is the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal, and walked after things that do not profit. Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead. These words are more timely than ever before in this country today. And now let's really hear a man who's walking like Jeremiah in the terrible arena of killing those babies. And we know that these abortions that are after 20 weeks, they use a certain procedure that will stop the heart of the baby, and then they pull it out piece by piece. And then they reassemble this small baby to make sure they have it all before they earn their profits in a hellish way. Lou, let's find out about Dale Henkel, his year in review.
Another year has come and gone. And as usual for me, it was just as busy as all of the others. If I wasn't on the road doing a university, a high school, or a city, I was making more trips to the local abortuary. I traveled 26,550 miles this year, 14,400 in my car, 3,700 in other vehicles, and 8,400 by plane, after I was forced to surrender my Fourth Amendment rights to the TSA in airports around the country. I was in only 13 other states this year. That's the second lowest during the 15 years I've been doing this. I was in 9 of these states multiple times. I skipped a couple quarters in my financial reporting this year, so here's my year-end report. Donations were up by 14.8% over 2013, and expenses were also up, but by only 3%. This does not include the donations that came in late in the month to church. I'll be depositing them in January. They will be included in next year's reporting, as I do every year. The bottom line is that I had just over $2,000 to go along with my Social Security to live on this year. That's about $167 per month. All the rest of your donations went into the ministry, giving you a pretty good bang for the buck. Thanks to all of you that keep me going. All of my bills are paid, and that's all that matters. I'm not part of the prosperity gospel. Give to get. Whatever you decide to donate is going directly into ministry work, and you share in the eternal rewards. Unlike a lot of other ministries, I'm not here to get rich. I'd rather lay up treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You can't take it with you. You never see a Brinks truck in a funeral procession. Biblically speaking, the best way to protect yourself is to continue to give to godly ministries. Then God can take care of you. But don't give to get. God loves a cheerful giver. From 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 15. In January, I reported on the OSA planning meeting in Kannapolis, North Carolina. I did 2 high schools and a abortuary and passed out information to the neighbors of an abortionist. He's from India, and we have him on video saying he doesn't understand why we want to save ugly black babies, unquote. At this gathering, Pastor Flip Benham announced that he was stepping down as the National Director of Operation Rescue, Operation Save America. His longtime assistant, Pastor Rusty Thomas, became the new leader of the group at the end of OSA week in July. Also, with LifeLink, the local Operation Rescue, we had our annual Roe versus Wade Memorial at preterm on a cold day. Temperature was zero, wind chill 25 below. In February, I was at Arizona State University with a much nicer 80 degrees. My dad lived out there, and I knew when his time came to go to his eternal home, God would arrange it with one of these trips. This was that trip. I learned a lot about honesty and hard work from him. Thank you again to all those that sent notes. In March, I wrote about the death of 22-year-old Lakeisha Wilson that I witnessed at preterm. She was at least 5 months pregnant and had had a reported 3 or 4 previous abortions. When the ambulance arrived, I thought it was the usual. She was bleeding. The obituary can't stop it. Come get her. 4 days later, after hearing the 911 call from preterm, we found out about the severity of the situation. She had not been breathing for 28 minutes. I was amazed at the lack of concern by the caller. We also found out that they restarted her heart and kept the body alive until they could harvest her organs for transplant. Talk about being used. Preterm kills her and then passes her body off to University Hospital so they can make money off of her by doing the transplants. We had a press conference with 4 black leaders. None were from the Cleveland area. I explained how Channel 19 belittled us and the rest of the news media ignored us, ending the news cycle as quickly as they could. In April, I reported on my March trip to the University of Georgia and the ever-increasing number of sodomites. I see the numbers increasing everywhere I go compared to the last time I was there. I reported on a conversation I had with a lesbian holding a sign that read, "If the fetus is gay, would you fight for its rights?" standing next to another female with a sign that read, "It's a woman's right to choose." I told the lesbian, "Yes, I would," and turned the same question back at her. She had to think for about 10 seconds before answering yes. The other female knew where I was going and tried to change the subject, because if it's a woman's right to choose, then she has the right to abort a gay fetus. It was a no-win situation for them. The gay fetus sign disappeared as soon as I left. In May, I gave you an update on Lakeisha Wilson's death at preterm from the coroner's report. She died from a heart attack caused by internal bleeding. Also, we picketed University Hospital, where all of preterm's 4 or 5 abortionists have their admitting privileges when they botch an abortion, such as Lakeisha Wilson. In June, I gave another update on Lakeisha Wilson. The city prosecutor had declined to file charges against anyone at preterm. We expected this because abortion is a sacrament of politically wrong that is left. The abortionist and the person in charge of the recovery area should have been charged with negligent homicide. I also reported on the fight within the family for custody of Lakeisha's 2-year-old child, so they can get their hands on the lawsuit money. Too bad no one cared about any of her aborted children. In July, we had a mini OSA, that is Operation Save America, week in Dayton, Ohio, before going directly to New Orleans, Louisiana, for the annual event. We set up our displays in both downtowns. We also went to the French Quarter in New Orleans with the pictures. I was at the corner of Bourbon Street and Canal Street. It's basically the entrance to Mardi Gras and Southern decadence, the reason God wiped out New Orleans with Katrina in 2005. They're back at it. They still haven't learned their lesson. We had favor with the police in New Orleans. That does not happen too often. In August, I reprinted a terrific reminder of grace, which gives a word picture of Jesus Christ recording everything we do, good and bad. I asked the question, what's in your file? And I noted that there's still time to improve it. In September, I wrote the director of JFA abruptly. I wrote about the director of JFA abruptly resigning. He will be sorely missed by every one of us that are full-time pro-life missionaries. I also wrote about canceled university trips, probably caused by Comrade Obamanation's economy. He says it's getting better, but we all know the unemployment numbers are dummied up. Even so, I did have a trip to Chester, that is, West Chester, Pennsylvania, with LifeLink. We did the downtown and the university for the second year in a row. I documented how our beloved America is going apostate with a couple conversations I had with our young people, not learning enough about true Christianity to remain in the church when they get out on their own. In October, I wrote about preterms workers getting nastier after the Cleveland prosecutor, in quotes, decided not to charge anyone with the death of Lakeisha Wilson. As I said before, abortion is a sacrament of liberals. I also mentioned a series of articles the local weekly black newspaper did concerning Lakeisha. They started strong and ended weak.
We can see the trend worldwide that the culture of death that Satan would like to put in which Christians and Jews, the peoples of the book, the Bible, are slaughtered someday. And as this apostasy moves on, it brings a kind of a callousness to the people who have no belief in a God of love and a God who said that we were to love our neighbor as ourselves. We look at Wall Street Journal, January 2nd, there was a report entitled, Europe's Empty Churches Go and Fail. And this secularization of England and Europe is just continuing at a quick pace. Actually, they said, quote, the Church of England closes some 20 churches a year, while approximately 200 Danish churches have been deemed non-viable. And the Catholic Church in Germany has shut down about 515 churches in the past 10 years. In the Netherlands, the situation is even worse, and Catholic leaders estimate that two-thirds of their 1,600 churches will be out of commission in a decade, with 700 of Holland's Protestant churches expected to close within 4 years. And that's out of Breitbart, January 5th, 2015, Europe sells off churches. And we'd have to wonder here the relationship between the euthanasia, the death, the choice to, you know, let even children, in most cases, decide to commit suicide. Just so terrible, the things that have happened in Holland since the time of Corrie ten Boom, that wonderful traveling evangelist who came out of the dreaded concentration camp, Ravensbrück. So things are not looking good there in Europe. And in England, it had a significant tradition of Baptist, Methodist, Brethren, and other nonconformist churches that, you know, were separate from the state church. But this is not so good now. Things are happening because there's apostasy there. And according to David Cloud, he says, this is a fulfillment of Bible prophecy such as 2 Timothy 4, 3-4. And so Christians, quote, Christians, are in this New Age spirituality, and they're joining up with each other for, quote, social justice endeavors. And they're going to have, according to Cloud, the shared consensus that the kingdom of God must be built by human hands. And he says the hour is very late. It is very late. And we see a lot of other trends that show this move toward a persecution of both Christians and Jews, eventually Bible-believing Jews. HarperCollins removes Israel from map. Again, this is from Way of Life, January 9th. HarperCollins has apologized for omitting Israel from an atlas it published in early 2014 for sale in schools in the Middle East. The Collins Primary Geography Atlas for the Middle East is advertised as providing, quote, in-depth coverage of the region and its issues, end of quote, including, quote, its socioeconomic development and interrelationships with neighboring regions and the wider world. On December 31st, HarperCollins UK issued an apology stating, quote, HarperCollins regrets the omission of the name of Israel from their Collins Middle East Atlas. This product has now been removed from sale in all territories, and all remaining stock will be pulped. HarperCollins sincerely apologizes for this omission and for any offense caused, end of quote. In 2013, Scholastic Publishing House erased Israel from a map in the book Thea Stilton and the Blue Scarab Hunt. A lot of people would like to join HarperCollins and Scholastic in removing Israel from the map, but it won't happen. According to Bible prophecy, Israel's future holds more trouble before the dawn of Christ's kingdom, but God put her back in the land, and she isn't going away. And following up on this a little bit more, we have to be watching this trend of what's going on, and I think that David Cloud, again, had another little article about the satellite view of Israel. And again, this was January 9th, 2015. On Christmas morning, astronaut Barry Wilmore took some beautiful photos of Israel from the International Space Station. I particularly like the one taken from the direction of the Sinai Peninsula, looking north across the entire length of Israel, Lebanon, and Syria to Turkey in the distance. A large portion of the Mediterranean is also visible. This shows the entire portion of land God gave to Abraham and his descendants, from Egypt to the Euphrates. Doesn't look like much today, even after the wonderful transformation that modern Israel has wrought, but one day this land will be the joy of the whole earth. Mount Zion will be the city of the great king, and the place of his nail-scarred feet will be glorified beyond imagination. Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion. On the sides of the north, the city of the great king, God is known in her palaces for a refuge. Psalm 48, 1 to 3. As we see this lack of real Christianity in Europe, as this diminishes and the darkness comes over the minds of people and into the hearts of the people there, the reprobate mind will increase further and further. And the thing that Lou and I hope that we are part of, and that is being a wall against the resurgence of Nazi times on earth, they will come again. And this persecution will be bad. So we now have to look at the death of the Jews in France. This is from Friday Church News Notes, January 16th.
The following is excerpted from The Death of the Jews in France by Pamela Geller, Breitbart.com, January 12, 2015. In the wake of the slaughter of four Jews in a Paris kosher supermarket by an Islamic jihadist, a Parisian Jew said, quote, in the past year, 7,000 Jews have already left France, and after this, there will be many thousands more. We are not safe in France anymore. There is no future for Jews here in France. We are finished in France. Unquote. Europe loves to memorialize dead Jews, even to the point of fetishizing them. It's live ones that they cannot tolerate. The idea that French President Francois Hollande did not want Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at a memorial march for Jews who were slaughtered in exactly the same way as Jews were in 2012 in Toulouse, where he said they were murdered because they were Jews, and even more importantly, in the same way as the Germans murdered Jews, speaks volumes. Inviting the head of a terror movement, Mahmoud Abbas, because Netanyahu was coming, was depraved. A French Jew wrote to me Monday, quote, "No one in France can protect the French Jews who will be massacred one by one." And even with 50,000 officers in front of synagogues, there are over 12 million Muslims in France. If 10% of them go extremist, which is low, there will be a bloodbath in Paris, and that blood will be Jewish, unquote. He said this about the massive march in Paris Sunday that was attended by political leaders from all over the world, except Barack Obama. Quote, "As you saw on TV, 3 million people marched for Charlie Hebdo. But believe me, no one marched for the Jews who were massacred in the Hypercatcher or Cachet supermarket. No one cares. People are getting used to it. France let its Jews die in World War II, and it will do it again," unquote. So will the rest of Europe. The Holocaust, while it was a German initiative, was carried out by every nation in Europe save for the Danes. There were Dutch Nazis, Polish Nazis, French Nazis, etc. Europe as a continent decided it was a good idea to get rid of the Jews. Researchers at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum have cataloged 42,500 Nazi ghettos and camps. That number includes death camps, forced labor camps, POW camps, brothels, and quote-unquote care centers in which the Nazis forced pregnant women to have abortions. There were 30,000 slave labor camps, 1,150 Jewish ghettos, 980 concentration camps, 1,000 POW camps, 500 brothels, and thousands of other camps. Over 42,000 concentration camps, that wasn't just the Germans.
Those are very important words by David Cloud at Way of Life. So important because as Lou read that, I was thinking about what I had read earlier about the churches leaving Denmark. In a future time, will those Danes have the kind of compassion and Christian love, brotherly love, to save a people? One would wonder. As we get farther into this callous attitude, it's going to make its way into America as times get worse and worse, as judgment comes. When I read in Jeremiah that we are to keep calling out, we are to cry out, we don't know who we're reaching on this program, but we have prayed that God will reach the hearts of those He wants to hear our message. And we do struggle to keep this program going, and if you want to help us, you can write to us. And letters of encouragement. Our box has been very empty lately. We would very much like to hear if this program is meaningful to you and helps you in your Christian walk. So you can write to Lou and Elizabeth Caverly, or just to Lou Caverly at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that is Lou Caverly at P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you would like to help defray our expenses to broadcast, which are considerable every month, you can write a money order or you can write a check. A check has to be made out to WWCR. We can't take money personally. So we just invite you to let us know if this program is meaningful to you. Now, when we're talking about this reprobate mind and this callousness toward those who are suffering, I think here is an example that we're starting here in America to look at things this way. Because as times get tougher, are you going to care about your neighbor? Is your neighbor going to care about you? Squatters slow Detroit's plan to bulldoze way to prosperity.
Detroit, Associated Press, by Corey Williams. Chris Matthews' crew showed up this month to demolish one of the thousands of vacant homes destined for demolition as part of Detroit's grand plan to bulldoze its way to prosperity when a call from his office stopped them in their tracks. Someone was living there. A middle-aged woman who watched the crew tear away the home's warped wooden steps the day before had called their company, Adamo Demolition, to point out she was living on the second floor, despite no power, heat, or gas, and a flooded basement. It was like a swimming pool. We would never have thought if anybody was upstairs, said Matthews, noting that the incident cost his crew time because the demolition wasn't called off until after they had shown up with their equipment. As Detroit carries out its plan to tear down tens of thousands of homes to combat blight and tailor the city to fit its population, which has dwindled to about a third the size of its 1950s peak, it will have to deal with an unknown number of squatters. Since the city doesn't allow occupied properties to be demolished, squatters who won't leave voluntarily and who have no previous connection to the homes have to be removed by police for violating the city's trespassing laws. That makes them a complication of sorts for the recovery of the city, which emerged in December from its largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. Clearing away as many vacant houses as possible, as quickly as possible, is a priority. Drug dealers often set up shop in them. Bodies turn up in them, and some houses have been sites of sexual assaults. But for some of the approximately 16,000 homeless people in Detroit, the structures offer safety and shelter. Michelle McRae calls them abandominiums, or abandonminiums. McRae, 58, has been homeless for much of her adult life, yet she has had her pick of vacant houses to live in over the years. You look for one that's decent, already fixed up, McRae said, from a homeless shelter where she stays when it's too cold to hunker down in a house without heat and other utilities. Quote, the first thing you do is cut the grass, because the neighbors want to know who you are and what's going on over there. You have to maintain the property, paint the place up, keep it looking good. Unquote. She sees it as a community service. McRae went on to say, quote, a lot of people leave the door open because they want somebody to move in there. When you got somebody that's living in a place that keeps people from coming in, tearing the place up, stealing the fixtures, it cuts down on people starting places on fire, stealing your furnace. A survey completed last year determined that more than 40,000 structures needed to be torn down. Another 38,000 had indications of blight and could be up for demolition. Squatters aside, the city will not stop its fight against blight, said Craig Fall, a spokesperson for the Detroit Land Bank Authority, the agency overseeing the project. He went on to say, quote, illegal occupancy is an issue, but there is plenty of work to do with homes that are not occupied, unquote. About 10% of the houses Adamo goes on to demolish have squatters, or evidence of squatters, according to Matthews. Tiffany Tilley, a real estate agent, said about 20 to 30% of the more than 100 properties she has shown have had signs that someone had been squatting in them. Tilley said, when you're in the kitchen, you might see food with plastic utensils in open jars. There was an incident, or two, when there were feces stored in a bedroom in a bucket. Squatters make it more difficult to show and sell properties, she said, referencing an East Side house shown to investors about a month ago. Quote, we didn't go past the kitchen, said Tilley, 38. It was evident someone had been in there or was still in there. There was always a risk of danger when you're dealing with someone who is squatting. I don't want to take that chance, unquote. Letitia Johnson wants vacant houses in her East English Village neighborhood to be occupied, but not by squatters. She sees people living in houses that don't belong to them as part of Detroit's blight problem. Johnson, a block captain and former leader of the Neighborhood Association, calls Detroit squatting, quote, an epidemic. I don't personally believe that any squatter is a good squatter, she said. You don't know exactly what is going on in that house. You don't know if they are tearing up that house. The person has no responsibility and will not be held responsible for anything that occurs at that house, unquote.
You know, I have a lot of articles sitting by Lou's reading chair, and I went in there the other day, and it was just like this headline there just gleamed up at me. Squatter slow Detroit's plan to bulldoze way to prosperity. And I thought, oh, my gosh, there it is, right there in plain view. Our priorities are prosperity, not human life. And to be in such a situation in America is unnecessary. If we had kept our strong Christian walk in all of the churches and kept our belief in God and in His doctrine, we wouldn't be in this kettle of fish. No, we wouldn't. Now, these 7,000 Jews who have left France, they are seeing that things are getting worse and worse. How long will it be before you and I, who are Bible-believing Christians, have to flee? We have the Atlanta fire chief fired for believing the Bible. This was Friday Church News Notes, January 16th. On January 6th, Kelvin Cochran, fire chief of Atlanta, was fired for publishing a book that contains quotes from the Bible and statements against homosexual behavior and other forms of immorality. Last November, Cochran had been suspended without pay and ordered to undergo sensitivity training after publishing a book that contains quotes against homosexual behavior and other forms of sexual perversion. And the headline at ChristianNews.net, November 26, 2014, was "Atlanta Fire Chief Suspended." The book, "Who Told You That You Were Naked?" contains lessons that Cochran prepared for men's Bible study groups. At the press conference to announce Cochran's firing, Atlanta Mayor Kasem Reed said, "I too am a person of very deep religious faith." 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, "Let all things be done decently and in order, and I want to make very clear in my judgment that was not done here." Chief Cochran's book was published in violation of the city's standards of conduct, which require prior approval of the ethics officer and the Board of Ethics. And The Blaze, January 8, 2015, had the headline, "Fire Chief Loses His Job," and stated that. Cochran claims that he had verbal permission from Atlanta ethics officer Nina Hickson to write the book and that he had given Reed's office a copy of the book in January 2014. Regardless, this is religious persecution, and it is probable that Cochran's firing was pushed by homosexual rights activists who were not satisfied with public reproof and sensitivity training. How ironic that Atlanta has an ethics officer, yet they persecute a Christian for quoting the Bible. How amazing that America has arrived at the place where government workers must get approval for their speech even when they are off duty. The Christian's constitutional liberties are being sacrificed at the altar of homosexual rights, and this is just the beginning of this phenomenon. Yet when we urge churches to have special prayer for the nation, the plea is met with silence. And that is David Cloud, and he further says, "We are glad that hundreds of people gathered at Georgia's Capitol building to protest Cochran's firing and to leave a petition with the mayor with nearly 50,000 names. Better luck next time, Family Research Council, January 13, 2015. But it is earnest prayer that is going to make any real and lasting difference. Persecution has been the order of the day for Bible believers for 2,000 years, and the Lord has given some wonderful promises along that line. If Mr. Cochran knows the Lord, he has nothing to fear. In fact, it is rejoicing time. Quote, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." Matthew 5:11-12. This is so important that as Christians, we do stand up for Jesus, and we do get the information out of what the evil things are that harm those who are defenseless. We have admired very much Clennard Childress, the pastor at the site of blackgenocide.org, who has brought out the truth that there is that Margaret Sanger Planned Parenthood aversion to black people and hatred of them and a desire to really kill them all off. So we admire this black sheriff, don't we, Lou?
Yes, we do. The following is excerpted from Milwaukee Sheriff, Christian News Network, December 31st, 2014. Sheriff David Clark has been featured on a number of news outlets in recent weeks, to discuss his thoughts about the incidents and the reaction that has followed. Last week, he was interviewed on CNN about a tweet that he sent this month to a journalist with the New York Times, which read, quote, "If only these faux protesters were asked by media about all the black-on-black killing, all black babies aborted in U.S. every year," unquote. Clark, who is a black man himself, was asked by host Poppy Harlow if he sent the message and what he meant by the statement. "Yes, I did," he replied. "When I hear these things, that black lives matter, the only people who really believe that statement are American police officers who go into American ghettos every day to keep people from killing each other. All right, so yes, I did send that, and I meant it. Look, the abortions. If black lives, if they really mattered, that's where the outrage would be. That's where we'd see protests," unquote. According to the website blackgenocide.org, published by New Jersey pastor and LEARN, which is Life Education and Resource Network president, Clannad Childress, since 2001, quote, "Over 8 million African American children have been killed by abortion." Also, it says the leading cause of death of African Americans is abortion. And it goes on to quote, "They say that if you were to combine the top 10 leading categories of causes of death for African Americans, it wouldn't come to half of the amount killed by abortion." That was those are the words of Reverend Clannad Childress. And he added, 52% of all African American pregnancies end in abortion, unquote.
And that Reverend Childress is just a hero in our book. There are some other good people trying to do right, too. And I think Lou will tell you about the governor in Maine, Governor LePage, and his connection with the Salvation Army and his philosophy about bringing people out of welfare.
This is Dateline Augusta. Governor Paul R. LePage joined the Salvation Army to kick off its annual Christmas Kettle campaign on Thursday, December 4th, 11:15 a.m., in a ceremony at the State House. Said Governor LePage, "For more than 120 years, Salvation Army Red Kettles around the world have been linked to the Christmas season. Mainers are generous people, known to help our neighbors, and the Kettle Campaign is one way to help those who need it most. I commend the Salvation Army and all the dedicated volunteers who will be ringing the bells this year, and I encourage you, if you are able, to donate to this good cause," unquote. The charitable organization expects to have more than 100 red kettles throughout the state on street corners and shopping areas through December 24th. And by the way, this was dated December 10th, 2014. The Salvation Army statewide kettle campaign goal is $734,000. Last year, funds donated at these kettles enabled the Salvation Army to provide services and programs to 41,000 men, women, and children statewide during the holidays and throughout the year. Lieutenant Joe Lyle, Corps Commanding Officer of the Capital Region, states, "We invite all community residents to join us in this effort to ensure that families in the communities we serve receive assistance such as food, clothing, utilities, and more." A Salvation Army brass ensemble will also be part of the festivities, playing holiday carols. There are 9 Salvation Army Corps facilities in Maine that offer services and programs for children, adults, and seniors. And it goes on to list them, Bangor, Portland, and so forth. In the past few weeks, several businesses opened or expanded, creating hundreds, and this is a separate article, by the way. In the past few weeks, several businesses opened or expanded, creating hundreds of new jobs. While government isn't creating those jobs, the state has helped create a more business-friendly environment. And I'm trying to look at the title here. This, Let's see. Making the successful transition from welfare to work. And this is authored by Governor Paul LePage. As a businessman, I understand economics and what it takes to run a successful business. In the past 4 years, I have brought that experience to state government, and today we are seeing changes for the better. More Mainers are working, as we have seen a steady decline in the unemployment rate. More than 8,500 jobs are listed on Maine's Job Bank now, and other websites offer even more. Those without work have turned to welfare to help, and our administration is committed to transitioning a welfare recipient to a career. And that commitment takes dedicated resources, time, and effort of both the person receiving benefits and those providing support. We have been working hard for 4 years to make much-needed reforms to Maine's welfare system. These reforms are necessary to ensure that Maine's limited taxpayer dollars are not being used, that is, are being used properly, not abused or wasted. We must make sure that our welfare resources provide services to Maine's truly needy. A safety net is essential to protect our most vulnerable Mainers, the elderly, disabled, and mentally ill. We must also make sure that welfare provides a hand up for Mainers who have fallen on hard times. It can happen to any of us, but we must not provide a handout to those who are able to work and earn a living without the taxpayers' assistance. That's why we have worked to implement common-sense welfare reforms. Many of those reforms have been adopted in other states, including states like Massachusetts and New York. We have put photos on EBT cards to discourage unauthorized use of the cards, and we have blocked the use of EBT cards at strip clubs, liquor stores, and casinos. We now require able-bodied welfare recipients to work, and we have improved Maine's welfare fraud unit. In addition to those reforms, we are waiting on decisions on two of my top priorities for welfare reform. We want to require drug testing of welfare recipients who have been convicted of drug crimes in the past. Taxpayer money should go to those who are truly needy, not to feed drug addiction. We are also working to enforce a federal law that prohibits illegal immigrants from receiving handouts. Again, our welfare dollars must be spent on truly needy Mainers, not those who are here illegally. Our administration will not tolerate anyone who takes advantage of the system. For those of you who need a temporary hand up, we are happy to help you learn how to come off the system, get out of poverty, and become a positive contributor to society. Of course, the best solution to welfare is a good job. We know there are jobs waiting out there. There are 8,500 job postings on the Maine Job Bank, and there are help wanted signs all around the state. We must continue to match up Mainers with those jobs on the Job Bank, and our career centers throughout the state are working on it. We are reforming welfare by focusing on what people can do, not what they can't. We also find out what they want to do. Our Welfare to Work program, administered by the Departments of Education, Health and Human Services, and Labor, has helped more than 1,200 Mainers on welfare find full-time careers by assessing their skills and matching them with jobs that work for them. Their collaboration is paying off for Maine's people. This year, the state's vocational rehabilitation program helped more than 1,000 people train for a new career, get a job, and successfully remain employed. The program had their highest rehabilitation ever and met federal standards for the first time in at least 20 years. If you or someone you know is on welfare, struggling, finding a job, or has a physical or intellectual disability and wants to work, the Departments of Labor and DHHS can help. Our administration is improving the lives of Mainers, and we are going to continue on with that good work.
It's so important that we strengthen the traditional ways of our country, our Christian country, and we would applaud Governor LePage for doing this. The other trend that we must keep tracking is the Muslimification of our country and our world. And here's a column by Georgie Ann Geyer, January 14th, 2015. And she has been a foreign correspondent and commentator on international affairs for more than 40 years. And you can reach her at GIGIGEYER@Juno.com. And that's GIGIGEYER@Juno.com. Tension mounts against Muslim immigration. Washington. If you're wondering what 2015 will bring, look at these recent stories from, quote, across the pond in Europe. In Dresden, some 18,000 people protested against the Islamization of Europe. Aware of the potential for dramatic photos and backgrounds for the rallies there, authorities in Cologne and Berlin switched off illumination on the most famous landmarks, the Cologne Cathedral, the Brandenburg Gate, and the TV tower at Alexanderplatz, lest it make the protesters look heroic. The German government seems more and more to have lost the capacity to deal with PEGIDA, the German acronym for the group Patriotic Europeans Against Islamization of the West, which criticizes and fears some Islamists for their treatment of women and anti-Semitism, the immigrants' use of the generous West German welfare system, and their contacts with Middle Eastern terrorist groups. In the French port of Calais, migrants mostly from Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Sudan have more than doubled in number this winter to several thousand as they wait uneasily and sometimes violently to cross the channel to England in search of jobs. There is no French government program to deal with them, and they have become something like free-floating particles in a sea already too full. The would-be migrants themselves respond as do particles pushed to the side in that sea. They spin off and try to find another watery way to their destination. The most recent detour has been through Hungary, where more than 26,000 people of 61 nationalities were prosecuted in 2014 for illegal border crossings, and another 35,000 sought asylum. Many now come from Syria and Afghanistan. And amazingly, even far north, open-minded Sweden is now suffering the pain of trying to absorb and adapt to increasing numbers of would-be immigrants and refugees. The situation came to a head in late December when a fire broke out in a mosque just outside of Stockholm. There, as elsewhere, claims were made of anti-Semitism on the part of Muslims, reminding many Europeans of the dark days of World War II and its heinous anti-Semitism. Some informed observers have even gone so far as to say privately that they fear a showdown of violence could erupt between the odd brand of Putin communism coming from Russia and the new rightist anti-Islamic groups that are gaining votes as European governments refuse to give citizens the protection from radical change that they want. While that type of apocalyptic thinking is certainly of the extreme, there are already grave warning signs that broadcast how these new Muslim immigrants differ from the old ones. The old came or were forced to assimilate into European society, while the new Islamic immigrants, particularly in England, too often show they have come to change the country. In the north of England last year was the appalling, indeed almost unbelievable, case of Pakistani immigrants who had taken 1,400 young English girls, groomed them for a year or so to become prostitutes, and then put them up for sale. The police, afraid to look anti-Muslim, did nothing for more than a year. The most recent and disturbing example of the intentions of some immigrants occurred in Birmingham, where a liberal-minded Sikh principal, and that's that religion, spelled capital S-I-K-H, I'm interjecting. This principal, Balwant Baines, was forced out of his position at the Saltley School and Specialist Science College by Muslims on the school board, who demanded he replace some science courses with Arabic studies, segregate female students, and drop a citizenship class on tolerance and democracy in Britain. There are simply too many cases on the books now not to believe that there is a powerful current among these Islamic immigrants that abhors belonging and demands ruling. And it is not only in Europe, but it is also in Canada and the United States, where anti-Semitism and the subjugation of women in particular are present in the minds and manners of too many Muslims. Indeed, in America itself, we need only look critically at the trial now starting in Boston of Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, accused in the Boston Marathon terrorist attack. He comes from quite a family. Not only are young Dzhokhar and his late older brother suspected in the bombing, but his mother and two sisters were earlier accused of shoplifting and various other crimes. So the question then comes down to one word, why? Why was this family, Muslims all from the extraordinarily brutal Chechen ethnic region of Russia, with no means of support in this country and with no loyalty to American principles, allowed to migrate here? The odds that they would succeed, given their background and the rage they had to have in their hearts against the world, were virtually nil, and they have fulfilled that promise with flying colors. And, of course, we have to interject there. This is a sort of a mainline columnist. Perhaps she doesn't know the connections there between the CIA, the FBI, these brothers. One of them had a roommate, I think, that was in the FBI. No, as the late Dr. Stanley Monteith said, we are preparing the best enemy that money can buy. Probably World War III is right around the corner, maybe with Russia. We need to pray about a lot of these things. So here is Georgianne Geyer then asking, so it is time to ask the unspoken and unspeakable question, why should the U.S. and Europe take as immigrants people who are 99.9% allied against the Western way of life? Why are we not protecting ourselves? Why are we singing infantile songs about how all have the right to be free when freedom for them is becoming radicalized and joining a murderous group like ISIS? Stay tuned. The story has only begun. And in Jeremiah, the people from the north would be allowed to come and invade. We've lost our Christian faith too much, and we ask America to repent. Then this incursion that threatens us will stop. God will heal our land. We thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom. Good night.